The City Club of Boise is a nonpartisan forum dedicated to free speech and the open exchange of ideas on issues critical to the Intermountain Northwest. Its motto is, "Things happen when people start talking." You can find information regarding forums, salons, and tours at cityclubofboise.org. The board president of the City Club and today's moderator for this forum on arts during a pandemic is Karen Sander.
Hello and welcome to today's City Club Conversation. I'm Karen Sander, City Club Board President and today's moderator. This program is being delivered online, so welcome attendees. I want to welcome our radio listeners who will be joining us via Boise State Public Radio on KBSX 91.5 and its affiliates throughout Southern Idaho and Northern Nevada. Today's forum is available for our audience in large part because of our City Club partners and sponsors. I would like to take time to thank a few of these organizations that help us achieve our mission to ensure compelling conversations, engage citizens, and a dynamic community. Our premier sponsor is Northwest Nazarene University and the NNU College of Business. Our annual sponsor is St. Luke's Health System. We also receive support from our forum series sponsors, AARP of Idaho, Bank of Idaho, Concordia University School of Law, Echelon Group, Micron, and Pacific Source Health Plans. City Club of Boise also receives grant funding from the Idaho Humanities Council. Thank you to our media partners, which include Boise State Public Radio, 670 KBOI, Idaho Statesman, Idaho Public Television, and our university partners, University of Idaho, Boise State University, and Northwest Nazarene University. Today's program is sponsored by Republic Services. Thank you. Also, many thanks to those of you who support City Club of Boise with memberships or a donation during registration. We appreciate your help during this time of disruption. Following our panelists' opening remarks today, there will be an opportunity for them to respond to your questions. You can use the Q&A function of Zoom. Just type in your question, or you can email it to Morgan, M-O-R-G-A-N, at cityclubofboise.org, and it will be provided to me. I'll do my best to present each question, and I may group similar questions so that we can make good use of our time. So with that said, I am going to introduce our panelists. So Charlie Fee is in his 29th season as producing artist director of Idaho Shakespeare Festival. We have Melanie Fales, the executive director of the Boise Art Museum. Laura Reynolds is the executive director of the Boise Philharmonic. Kurt Zwolfer is the executive director of The Cabin. Each speaker is going to do a presentation for about 3 to 5 minutes, and then we will open it up to do the Q&A. So we will start with Charlie right away. And I did all that without my video, sorry.
Yeah, that's great. No, the biggest problem of doing Zoom meetings is remembering to unmute yourself. Well, thanks so much, Karin, and thank you, everybody. It's great to be on City Club and with all of my colleagues to have a chance to reach out to our community and speak about what's going on in our community and with our companies. And it's also nice, really rewarding to hear that list of sponsors to City Club. And most of those sponsors I know are supporting all of us as well. So thank you to our sponsors. This should have been the third weekend of our season. We should have opened with Much Ado About Nothing 3 weeks ago, essentially, this weekend, and be right in the middle of rehearsal now for Henry V and Ain't Misbehavin', and have about 150 company members here in Boise with us. Instead, we have an empty theater. We have canceled our first two productions, Much Ado About Nothing and Ain't Misbehavin'. We are looking very carefully and working diligently with our partners throughout the community, both within the public safety community, Idaho's health and welfare, the governor's office, the mayor's office. But beyond that, we're working with our unions. Almost everyone who works at the Idaho Shakespeare Festival is represented by one of the performing arts unions, and they have a twin goal. First goal is employment for their members. Second goal is protect their members' health. Those goals are clearly in conflict. and they're in conflict for us as a company as well. Our audience's health and our artist's health come before everything. So while we have not canceled any more of our season yet, we're unsure if we can go on. We hope that we can open something this summer. I'm just going to have to leave it there and say we will have more news in the coming weeks. We feel that we've turned a little bit of a corner. Today we had a very positive meeting with the Actors Equity Union, which is representing all of our actors. And they really look to us in Idaho, you might not believe this, as leaders, because we come from a small state and we have a very large company, and they're really proud of that. So, you know, everybody hopes we can do more. Thanks, Karen.
Thank you, Charlie. I'm going to go to Melanie.
Thank you so much, Karen, and thank you for inviting us to participate in the City Club conversation. We appreciate it so much. So our plans also have been disrupted, like everyone here today. I'm sure we'll hear the same, a similar type of message. We've been working for the last several months to plan for reopening the museum. We're fortunate to have a large space so that we can invite people back into the museum following the governor's and the mayor's guidelines. And so this week we've actually been testing reopening with our membership by invitation and by reservation only. So we've been doing that for the last couple of days. And then we plan to reopen to the public on Friday with a limit on the number of people who can be in the museum at any one time. And obviously we're putting all of the safety measures in place. Everybody's wearing masks, staff as well as visitors. We've taken down all of our touchable samples and all of our interactives, the things that really engage people in a different way. All of those have been taken away, which is unfortunate, but luckily people can still come and appreciate the art exhibitions themselves. So starting on Friday, people will be able to come to the museum, and we do have 6 exhibitions that are up, and several of those were disrupted during our closure. So it will be nice for people to have the opportunity to come see those exhibitions. They're all listed on our website, but it also includes the masterworks that we're borrowing from the Smithsonian American Art Museum. So we really want people to have an opportunity to experience those before they leave in November. So we're pleased that the public will be able to come in starting on Friday. Typically, we would be planning for our camps and classes this summer. We would have lots and lots of children here. We would be planning for First Thursday coming up, and those things obviously are not going to be happening. So we have canceled hundreds of programs. We've canceled hundreds of classes, workshops, and are looking to the future to determine how and when we might be able to bring those back.
Thank you, Melanie. I'm going to ask Laura to jump in and give us an overview.
Hi, everyone, and thank you to the City Club for hosting this conversation. Echoing both my colleagues so far, we also at the Boise Phil have had to make a lot of changes this season. I arrived here in March, and before my first day, we effectively had to cancel the remainder mm-hmm. of our concert season. But, you know, as we did that, we were really lucky to be in a position to keep our musicians employed through that period. And we're really grateful to that, because we know that the arts community is suffering in a big way across our country right now, because so many artists are out of work, and there just isn't activity and there aren't performances, because we're really working to make sure that they're safe and that our communities are safe. This moment has been a really great opportunity for us to really think about, you know, why do we exist? Why are we important? What is the role of arts in our community? And how can we start to imagine the ways that we can interact with each other, have dialogue, and work together, both internally in our organizations, but also with our community, to create something next season that won't be canceled. There's not a whole lot that I can say about that yet because we're still working out all of the details, but I think that this period of time has just really brought into stark relief those important questions about why arts are important, how we all can work together and memorialize this period of time for our community, and ask big questions and be that mirror and that sort of place where people can come together to have these conversations about this really traumatic period. So, you know, it's been hard and it will continue to be hard because all of us are having to change in ways that normally we would take, you know, maybe a few years to create a strategic plan to implement, but we're doing it in weeks. And so, you know, it's an incredible period of creativity and growth, but also a period where I think the importance of what we do is even more relevant now than ever.
Great. Thank you, Laura. And we're going to turn it over to Kurt, but I, you know, this was going to be a preview of, well, the cabin preview. So here we are. Tell us what's going on.
Well, most of our programs have been altered, just like everyone else's. You know, our purpose at the Cabin Literary Arts Center is to forge community through the voices of all readers, writers, and learners. And we do that through arts programming. And we have a wide variety from very small, intimate programs to more performing arts-like programs like our Readings and Conversation series that originally this was going to be the reveal of. But just like everyone else, we've had to kind of shift gears and we've had to think differently about all of our programs. Few examples. One of our major programs is Writers in the School, where we pay local writers to have residencies in local schools and teach kids the love and joy of writing. Most of those residencies were about halfway through when the crisis hit. Obviously, the schools were canceled or in class was canceled, and so those programs fell apart really quickly, and there was no way we could resurrect them for this year. We ended up paying the teachers throughout the end of the year because it was important. We knew this was their livelihood, but we're unsure of what's going to happen next season. We do a lot of workshops every year, adult workshops. We do about 25 to 30 workshops, from free drop-in craft writing workshops to specific themed workshops on poetry or theater or the publishing industry. And of course, those in-person workshops had to be altered too. Those were the easiest ones to change. If anyone else does workshops, those can switch to an online format like this. But usually writing spaces are intimate. The groups get to know each other very well and they're very safe spots for groups to share. And it's hard to switch to this format. It seems a little more impersonal and it's harder for people to express their art and ideas in this type of format. We're coming up on our summer camp season. We normally do 40 to 50 summer camps every summer. We had to cancel all of June, and we have at this point a very limited schedule set up for July, but we're going to have to wait a few more weeks to see if that's actually safe to run small camps with 6 to 8 kids. And then, of course, our biggest program, we have a few other small ones, but our biggest one that's probably going to be impacted is Readings and Conversations. And probably a lot of City Club members are familiar with Readings and Conversations because it's a similar format. We bring in artists, Pulitzer Prize, National Book Award winners, diverse authors, best-selling authors, to come to the Egyptian or to the Morrison Center to share their work, share their ideas about both art and current events with the audience. And the idea is that we bring in these artists, these great thinkers from the outside, to hopefully jumpstart critical conversations about art and about the world here in Boise. And just like everyone else, well, Shakespeare has it more bearing down on them now. We're waiting till the fall to see what happens. But, you know, when the thing you do requires 700 to 1,000 people to get together in a theater, you have to think critically about how that's going to happen and if it's going to happen. And so at this point, we know our season will be altered in some way, and we're trying to come up with alternative ways to deliver that content, but we just don't know how it will go. I want to echo too what Laura said, you know, two things. One, protecting the local artists in this community are really, really important. You know, nonprofits are fragile, but artists' lives can be very fragile too. A lot of times they work in a gig economy, work side jobs to try to survive. And this has been devastating to the community. And so we're trying to find ways as much as we can to give out grants, to give work opportunities to those writers and artists in the community to keep them going. And then it's also a time to look at ourselves kind of a philosophical way. The thing that we thought we were, we might be a little bit different in the future. The core of what we do, the mission of what we do is the same, but the way we delivered those programs might have to change radically for the near or long-term future. And so it's time for staffs to be creative, to try out new things, and see if there's a new way we can deliver the programs and meet that mission that we've always tried to meet.
Thank you, Kurt. So I just would like to remind our listeners that please submit questions through the Q&A tool. And you can also send those to morgan@cityclubofboise.org. So just a quick reminder to our radio listeners, you're listening to City Club of Boise, our virtual conversations featuring Charles Fee, Melanie Fales, Laura Reynolds, and Kurt Zwolfer. So, you know, Kurt, you set it up nicely. I've got a number of questions that I'll ask as we're waiting on questions from our audience. But the ripple effect is huge. You know, you mentioned staffing, and maybe I'll start with Charlie. You know, just talk a little bit about that ripple effect, because it's not just about canceling and refunding a ticket. It's so much more.
Really important, Karin, for us to underscore for the listeners here what the effect is on an arts company, because it affects hundreds and hundreds of people behind the stage, right? Mm-hmm. Behind that painting, et cetera, behind the orchestra. And all of our artists, of course, but beyond our artists, our production teams who are creating sets and costumes and props and lighting and all of that, our administrative staff, box office staff, et cetera. There are many, many, many lives that are tied to our work in creating Shakespeare Festival, the Philharmonic, you know, the museum, the cabin. And for many of those people, it is essentially, it's a gig economy, you know, regardless of whether they're union members or non-union members. When I shut down a production and say, I'm sorry, we're not doing this, they're instantaneously out of work. Mm-hmm. Those actors, those production teams. Now, we're fortunate at the Shakespeare Festival in that at this point, we went into this in a very good, solid financial position. We have not laid off any administrative staff. We have not laid off any of our year-round production team. But of course, that's a question of how long any of us can last and how long this goes on, right? As the months go by, it gets harder and harder for all of our companies. Because, you know, for all of us, and particularly those in the performing arts, to be honest, we don't have any product the day that our theater is closed. Right. The reality is the idea of live streaming theater, it's just a non-starter, frankly. That's not, you know, there's plenty of stuff on Netflix and Hulu, right? Nobody's really interested in watching a live stream from the Shakespeare Festival. So it's tough.
Melanie, Laura, or Kurt, you want to weigh in on that? Anything to add?
We at the Boise Art Museum also have not laid off staff at this point, and we really are committed to keeping our staff in place just as long as possible. As Charlie said, we don't know exactly how long that will be, but we are fortunate to be able to have participated in the Small Business Administration PPP loan programs, which help us. So that was really wonderful that nonprofits were included in that opportunity. And certainly, though, artists and instructors who help us with our outreach programs that go out into rural schools. And those, as Kurt mentioned, were canceled when the schools closed. And so it definitely has an impact on people in a widespread way that I think not everyone is aware of. The artists, my heart really goes out to the artists whose works are on display in museums all over the nation right now. And people are not being able to come view them. We have the Idaho Triennial on display right now with Idaho artists' works on display, and people haven't had the opportunity to see those works. We have a traveling exhibition that's actually in Michigan And because art shippers haven't been shipping or doing any of that work, which also people don't really think about, that exhibition had to be extended and all of the artists had to grant additional permissions for their works to be on view. And so all of the plans that they had were completely changed by all of this. And so it really does have a wide, wide impact.
Great. Thank you. Laura.
I just wanted to build on the things that both Melanie and Charles have shared. And, you know, in addition to what happens internally with the ripple effect for all the people that we employ, we also, arts organizations are a huge part of our local economies. When people come to our shows, and they also go out to dinner. They also, you know, get dressed up and do, you know, make it an evening out in our communities. So when I think about the ripple effects of the performing arts or arts in general and this crisis, I also think about the ways in which, you know, we're an integral part of our small business community and how when we come back together again, that we are really part of this bigger ecosystem as well.
Great, thank you. There are a number of questions with regard to, and I think somebody heard you, Laura, talk about memorializing this time. You know, are there new works in, you know, happening and what do you, How will this time be reflected in future works, I think is another way to ask that.
Maybe I can jump in. We started a program almost immediately. Literary arts lends themselves well to reflecting almost immediately. Philharmonic, theater, even the art museum, there's time to create that art. Not to say that literary arts doesn't take time, but it can react quicker. And so one of the things we did almost immediately when we closed down is we set up a program for 2.5 months called Writers at Home, where we contacted local writers and we paid them to create some sort of work as a reflection on what was going on right now that we could post on our social media and on our website so that we could both pay the art community for some work to give them another gig, but also that our community could see how local artists were handling this in different ways and reflecting on it. And, you know, we've also thought about that as a way forward. Really, a lot of our programs in the past have been bringing in artists and acting as a forum for artists. But maybe one of the ways for the arts groups to go forward or for our arts group to go forward is to actually pay artists to create some original work for the cabin and for the community itself. It's a different model, a very different model than what we've had in the past, but it might be a way that we can both sustain the local arts community and still create some sort of unique programming when we can't bring in someone from New York or from San Francisco to stand on a stage.
Great, thank you, Kurt. Laura.
Yeah, and I know the local arts community here too has the COVID commissioning fund that I think it was the Morrison Center and the city that put that together in Treefort. And so I think this community has done a really good job of supporting local artists and trying to find ways to engage. When I think about this question for the Phil, I think about, you know, what are the questions that we're asking as we're going into our programming? What are the ways in which we're going to present with community and the conversations that we need to have together with our community and how can we use that as a frame for the art that we're going to experience together?
Thank you. You know, this is a time that, you know, the events of this last week and recent years and so much of our country's history have Americans thinking about racism right now. How do the arts inform us on racial injustice and guide us maybe to some new solutions? Any thoughts on what's going on, you know, in addition to a pandemic, you know, how are we dealing with that how are you dealing with that in your organizations?
It's really, you know, this is a trying time. And the last 8 days for all of us, as artists, but also as leaders and as you know, managers, we're really tested by this. We have many, many members of our company, you know, are African American actors, directors, designers, etc. actors of all colors, but let's be honest, I mean, this was extraordinarily focused on the African-American community. And, you know, our educators and the people that we're working with all across the country, I mean, this is a devastatingly difficult time. And we have to, you know, begin by acknowledging their pain, begin by acknowledging, you know, that we can reach out to them in solidarity with them. And as a company, we have, I think all of us have posted, you know, some kind of statement of solidarity for everyone that stands against hatred and bigotry and stands for compassion and empathy and understanding. And of course, those qualities, that they're what all of us in the arts, that's what we bring, right? In our work as interpretive artists, in our work as primary artists, is an ability to empathize with diverse cultures, with people whose lives have seemingly no intersection with ours, but the arts can bring us into understanding, whether it's reading a novel, right, or it's listening to a symphony, or it's standing in front of a great work of art. You know, that is what our work brings. But we really have to commit to it right today.
Anybody else? Melanie?
The other thing that's very important about this is we have to acknowledge our place of privilege and also be humble and understand that we don't know exactly how to make this situation better. We would love to, as leaders, be able to have the solutions and be able to solve the problem, but I think that the one of the best things we can bring is this ability to convene community. And unfortunately, right now, the pandemic has really taken that away from us, that ability to gather people and to continue, except through these kinds of virtual formats, which is truly unfortunate. But I do think that if we can come together as the strong community we are, we can really make the difference that needs to be made. And we have to really be intentional and look at everything we are doing and how we're doing it in order to really be a part of that systemic change that has to happen.
Great. Thank you, Melanie. Kurt or Laura?
So, I mean, I think we're all, you know, in a position in our organizations to be able to affect this change, because it's really about how are we having conversations, honest conversations in our institutions and together with community about the ways in which the choices that we make either bring together and uplift and provide these different perspectives, or the ways that we might marginalize or silence communities. And so I think the more that work that we can do as leaders to reflect on what our roles and our positions are, and have those honest conversations within our organizations and together with community, the more we're all going to be able to really think about and use art as a medium and a tool to have these conversations together.
Thanks, Laura. Kurt.
And you know, essentially a traditional art organization, we're gatekeepers. We are, and that can be both a good thing and a bad thing. But in this case, it can be a bad thing. We all have our built-in biases, whether we admit it or not. And I think a moment like this is a moment for the leaders of the arts organizations to think hard about our programming and whose voices we represent. We are in a very, very unique position to amplify voices that normally aren't heard or ignored by, say, the traditional publishing industry or by art museums. And so we really have to look at this moment as a time of change for us too. Have there been points of view? Have there been diverse voices that we have ignored for whatever reason? And how can we bring those and amplify those voices for our community so they can help understand the root of the problem?
Thank you. A great lead in, and I think this was mentioned on, you know, bringing people together. And of course, in amongst the pandemic, that's really hard to do. So we have a number of questions about how we could still gather, but 6 feet apart. So, you know, let's maybe start with Charlie. And, you know, is there any way to do it physically?
Yes. So we have a huge advantage in our particular amphitheater over a fixed seat theater, right? None of our seating is fixed. And that means for us to reconfigure our amphitheater to a venue of, let's say, 300 people from 800 to 300 is simple as from a technical standpoint. Our ability to have ingress, egress from different directions, which is critical, is simple. We're an outdoor space that lends some confidence in people that they can attend and feel somewhat more safe than they would walking into a small indoor theater or even a large indoor theater. So we have advantages, but it's really critical that we are able to enlist our audience to essentially be collaborators in the safety of our spaces. Because, you know, the recent survey out of New York from the Broadway audience was the number one fear of the New York audience for going back into the theaters in New York is other people. It's the fear that while I may have an agreement to wear a mask, to distance myself, to behave in a certain, you know, way, to follow protocols that will be for everyone's safety, I'm not sure that I trust that others will. Now, that is something that I think we in Boise, I think we have an easier time of this, right? We have an audience that we know extraordinarily well. All of us know our audiences in a very deep way. And that's different than a commercial audience in New York. But we're going to have to really enlist them. When they walk into the museum, right, Melanie? I mean, they have to agree walking through your door that they're going to behave in a certain way. And the same is true in our theaters, and maybe even, you know, in some ways a little more difficult because we call everyone together at the same time of night and they sit there for 2.5 hours and then they all leave at the same time. That's a little tricky.
Melanie, do you want to weigh in?
And you are absolutely right about that. And one of the things that we did in our work in bringing people back to the this week was to actually put the information on our website. And when people made reservations, we also let them know what those expectations would be so that everybody who was planning to come had that understanding and that agreement with us. You know, we can have about 125 people in the museum and still guarantee that they have that 6-foot radius all the way around them. But right now we're sticking to about 50 people at a time. But what we're seeing is that people are tentative and they're taking their time in terms of wanting to come back. And so I think it will take a while before people do trust that we will be enforcing those guidelines and that everybody will be taking those steps together. But so far, what we've seen this week is people have been very cooperative, very collaborative. They understand everything and they want these safety measures in place. So it's gone very well so far.
You know, Melanie, I'm going to do a follow-up for you. So, you know, you host one of the largest community events that's been going on for 50 plus years, Art in the Park. So I'm sure you've been huddling with your team. It's 6 feet apart and talking about logistics. How will you do that, or are you going to?
So right now we are planning for Art in the Park. We understand that the university is bringing students back in August. So that seemed like a really good indicator to us that larger groups would be coming back together. We obviously will follow any guidelines that are put in place at that point. But we've also been communicating with each of the 260 artists and food vendors who were selected just as we were closing due to the pandemic. So we are planning to move forward. We will probably have a sponsor who's handing out free masks for the event. And the nice thing is it's outside. And so everything the science has been telling us is that outside spaces are much safer in terms of transmission of anything. And so we're optimistic about that. But I will say at the same time, we're doing intensive research to try to figure out what our alternatives might be and how we might be able to have this event in a different way, which honestly, right now, the technology isn't there and doesn't exist, but we're doing all kinds of research to figure out what we might be able to do.
That's great. Thank you. There have been a couple of questions with regard to kind of the legal side of things. So if you are sharing anything virtually, do licensing and copyright rules apply? You know, how are you handling sharing information and product online? Who would like to take that?
I'll start. Okay. Absolutely. Copyrights and licensing absolutely apply. And it's different in a digital broadcast than it is from a live performance. And so, you know, we have a fabulous librarian on our staff that works together with our music director to talk to all of the publishers and talk to all of the composers and folks whose material we might present and broadcast, and we have to go through a whole set of negotiations there. So, I mean, this is another ripple effect of some of the changes that we're having to make in our operation. But, you know, this is also something that everyone is having a conversation about right now. So, in some ways, the folks on the other side are prepared for that conversation, and a lot of people are being really generous and really supportive in helping organizations like ours navigate through somewhat new territory.
Anybody else want to weigh in on that one? Kurt?
So when we bring authors out, every author that we have who makes an appearance in Boise, we go through an extensive contract negotiation with them. And recording is always something they don't want us to do. When you're on the lecture circuit, a lot of times you're presenting the same lecture multiple times in different cities. And if someone records that and broadcasts it, it essentially steals the show before you appear in another city. And so they're very reluctant to be recorded when they're on the stage talking about their books. And so we've started into negotiations with the first authors in our series because we don't know what to expect. And we've been able to get to the point where we can record them, but we only if we release that recording for a limited amount of time, for 24 hours or for 48 hours, in roughly the same period we would give the presentation. If we wanted to record it to save it for an archive, to show it later to ticket holders, most of the authors aren't willing to do that. So authors want to get their face, their story, their book in front of the public. And right now, with advertising kind of shut down because the news media is focused on both crises going on, we are a way that can get those authors to readers, but we can only go so far with the recording. They're willing to have us take a few steps so they can get to the readers, but they don't want us essentially to steal their content from them because it's how they make their livelihood.
Great, thank you. You all mentioned, you know, your national organizations, whether it's unions or others. What kind of support are you getting from your national organizations? And what does that look like? And what's the trickle-down effect of not just your organization, but those that you employ? What does that look like?
Well, I will just reiterate that, you know, we have umbrella organizations that are for all of the theaters in the country, as well as all of our unions. The support we're getting from everyone has been tremendous. And the unions are being incredibly flexible and incredibly helpful in helping all of us negotiate this process. And you know, just as Kurt and Laura were talking, you know, all of the royalties companies, right, that you know, handle the material that we're doing that's non-Shakespeare material, they are all being so gracious. It's like a very different world with them today. They've been writing to say, please figure out a way to get our material out to your friends and family, you know, and so it's been actually quite good the way the communities come together.
Anybody else? Melanie?
We are part of the American Alliance of Museums, and that's a national accrediting organization. And so they provide all kinds of resources to museums throughout the nation. But I think perhaps the most valuable resource for us has been the Association of Art Museum Directors, which is also a national organization. And they've been incredibly supportive by actually pulling us all together on a weekly basis throughout the entire closure period to share with one another, share with museums in New York, share with museums in the Midwest, in the South? What are you facing? What are you dealing with? What are the questions that your staff is asking you? How are you dealing with getting, how are you dealing with layoffs? How are you dealing with furloughs? What are you doing about your art exhibitions that you're having to extend or cancel? And so that has been incredibly, incredibly helpful so that we were all connected and kind of helping one another through those problem solving processes.
Laura. Yeah, in the orchestra world, we have the League of American Orchestras, and they've been an incredible advocate through this period of time. And they have an amazing advocacy team there that has been lobbying on behalf of arts nonprofits to secure things like the PPP funding and including us in those conversations. So they've been an enormous advocate for the industry during this period of time, but also, you know, they shifted their national conference from being an in-person event to being a 6-week long virtual event that has brought everyone together, and it's free for all of the members. And so there are folks on my team that never would have had the opportunity to go travel to the conference and attend just because it's pricey to make that journey. And so, you know, everyone on the team now can log in and have access to all of these resources. So I've been just impressed at the ways that our national bodies have come together to be supportive. And I think that that's actually like a huge, wonderful piece of this period of time for everyone, is just the way in which people are showing up for each other and helping each other. And that's, it's beautiful. And I hope it continues.
Kurt, do you want to add to that?
So the literary arts world is a little more fragmented. We don't have really a solid group. There are certainly partner organizations, Portland Arts and Lectures, Seattle Arts and Lectures, so organizations in San Francisco and Bend. And we've been having conversations, mostly bouncing ideas off of each other and saying, how do you deal with this? How did you change with that? It's definitely a time to get with colleagues. There's even a group of local art museum directors who have been getting together to talk about the problems and the challenges of the current situation. But one of the groups that's been helping out, or I hope will be helping out, in the CARES Act, don't know if a lot of the City Club members know this, there were provisions for the arts. So the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment from the Humanities, and then the sister organizations in town, the Idaho Commission on the Arts and the Idaho Humanities Council, all received money to give out in grants to arts organizations to help get them through this difficult time. Now, with any grants, of course, it'll be competitive, and not everyone will get the grants, but it was great that the government did recognize how important the arts are to the community and how it has that ripple effect on other jobs. And so there is a little bit of a support network out there through those granting organizations.
Great, thank you. You know, I think it's a great time to mention, I think the support has been great through some of those. And then I think it was mentioned earlier, the COVID commissioning fund, the CCC fund through City of Boise, Arts and History, Tree Fort Morrison Center. So they've been able to pool some funds and offer some funding. I think it's 69 individuals. And I believe the grant program is opening up, and they've got about $150,000. Again, it's competitive with the grant process, but I think, you know, as far as a community, the resources that are being pulled together are wonderful. I do have a question with regard to that, though. Do artists, actors, musicians qualify for unemployment? Charlie, do you want to take that one?
Yeah. Yeah, so our artists fall into different categories, but all of the actors are salaried employees through their union, and they all qualify for unemployment. The designers and directors, however, are independent contractors, and so they do not generally qualify for unemployment. But the CARES Act has been trying to get money out to what we consider, in a sense, the gig economy workers, which are contract workers. I have to be honest that everyone I've spoken to in my company, in that world, no one has gotten through to unemployment yet on the gig economy side. However, the CARES Act PPP funding was also made available to contract employees. And so I do have directors and designers who have been able to get funded through PPP, which is pretty remarkable, I have to say. And so, yes, and let's just recognize, I hope, as a full community, when we face a pandemic or any other major disruption, it is this form of government funding of unemployment and PPP through the CARES Act. This is the survival line for most of the arts in America. I was on unemployment when I was a young artist more than once, and I have to tell you, I considered it national endowment funding, even though it wasn't. But that is one of the ways we have to support artists.
Great, thank you, Charlie. And I do want to mention that City Club of Boise did benefit from that CARES Act and through the Idaho Humanities Council. So we are all very appreciative of being able to keep the lights on and keep our employees employed. So it's definitely something that we are appreciative of. We're all membership organizations in some way, shape, or form. How is the pandemic impacting membership? Are people still supportive? Are your sponsors there for you? Are your members there for you? And maybe I'll start with Melanie.
So we have a very loyal group of members who have continued their memberships even during the time we're closed. Although, people are facing difficult times. And so our membership overall is down and people make those difficult decisions about where they're going to spend their dollars right now. But we certainly still have a very, very supportive membership group. Our revenues, though, were halted by the closure, our admissions revenues. There are grant funders who have changed their giving guidelines and have moved more toward health and human services rather than arts. And so that makes that more difficult in terms of our fundraising efforts. And again, with our classes and workshops and things canceled, we definitely have seen our revenues dramatically impacted.
Laura, do you want to address that?
Yes, one of the things that I've been really impressed by in moving to Boise is just the ways in which the community's shown up and the ways that our subscribers and donors have shown up. We canceled the remainder of the season, but about a number of our ticket holders ended up donating their tickets back to the tune of about $20,000, which was just really incredible to see that sort of generosity. And we've seen the same with our sponsors, and our sponsors have stayed with us. They have, committed to, we ended up canceling our gala. They ended up committing to keeping their sponsorship with us for when we rescheduled. It's been remarkable and, truly, I think, a sign of this community's commitment to arts and to each other. And I've just been blown away with the generosity and support during this period of time.
Charlie, do you want to weigh in on that?
Well, the same, that Laura and Melanie are saying, and Kurt, I'm sure, experiencing it. Welcome to Boise, Laura. It's incredibly generous for a small community, and a remote community. The level of support is incredible. Our sponsors have been sticking with us. Not every single sponsor can, but the ones that can't, call and, apologize for 5 minutes. And you say, guys, we understand, they're making very hard choices for their corporations. But for the most part, our sponsors are with us, our members are with us. And the same thing that Laura found when she's canceled, the number of our subscribers that are donating their tickets to support the company is just huge. And it makes all the difference to our ability to sustain what we're going through, but to be here and ready to produce again when we get past this, right? And that's the key. We are losing or seeing threats to legacy companies in the United States, in the performing arts, in museums, etc., that are probably not going to survive this. And it's really up to our communities to rally with us and for us as leaders to get ourselves through this. But I think in Boise, we're in about as good a place as you can be.
Well, I just wanted to say that beyond, you know, the support that has come in during the crisis, the reason our organization, and I'm willing to bet the other organizations here, are able to weather the storm in the first few months here is that the community has invested in us over the years. It's an incredibly generous community. They truly believe in the arts and they make us strong. And I can't imagine going into this crisis if we were teetering on the financial edge as we were coming in, but we are coming into it strong, and that allows us to then pay artists to do extra work while we're closed. It keeps the administrative staff going. Now, obviously, as long as the crisis goes, that could alter, those funds could run out, but thanks to the community, most of our organizations were strong going into this, which will hopefully help us get through and see the other side.
Thank you. That's really, really insightful. You know, we've got about five-ish minutes left, and I want to go through and ask each of you. We've had a couple questions about, you know, what are each of you reading or listening to right now? And, you know, what would you suggest to our audience to read or listen to versus just Netflix? I'm just saying. I'll start with you, Kurt. What are you reading?
Well, I'm kind of all over the place. I'm a voracious reader, and I churn through stuff almost every day, and I can go from very serious journalism to classical novels to science fiction to plays and poetry. You know, I get this question a lot, especially as the literary arts organization, what should I be reading right now? And it's interesting because readers deal with the world in different ways. Mm-hmm. Some readers want, and I guess this is how people approach art in general, some people want an escape. They want art for them to be a complete escape, to take them away from the moment so that they don't have to think about what's going on. And there are other people who want to dive in deeply and see if they can uncover the root of the problem and what's going on. I guess I'll pivot to that a little bit. Again, talking about amplifying Black voices right now, we've had a number of artists who have been out in the last few years who I would highly recommend to the audience if they're interested in Black writers and the Black experience. We had Ta-Nehisi Coates here and Mitchell Jackson last year. Terry Jones was here and Jesmyn Ward came, a two-time National Book Award winner, and actually on our stage talked about the anguish a mother goes through when she has a young Black son and knows he has to grow up in the society. And all those voices are very strong, will be able to give the Boise audience a different perspective and help them understand some of the anguish the community is going through right now.
Charlie, do you want to share what you're reading or listening to?
Like everyone, and Kurt nailed it, you know, some of it's just crazy, like, get me out of this world entertainment. And so I have to admit, my daughter came back from Los Angeles to shelter with us here in Boise, you know, which is an absolute joy for us, I have to say. And so I've been introducing her to Peter Sellers films, like The Party, which I highly recommend for anyone who hasn't seen it or, you know, hasn't seen it since they were a child. So, you know, like a spate of Peter Sellers films. Hideously, she got me to watch Chernobyl. Oh, God, it's like the worst and best time to watch Chernobyl. It's so horrifying. Etc. But just before we canceled, you know, we were looking at producing Fats Waller's great music in Ain't Misbehavin'. It's the 100th year anniversary, essentially, of the Harlem Renaissance. And so I've been listening to Waller's music, but also reading about the Harlem Renaissance and getting, you know, some real sense of that just sea change artistically taking place in the United States in, you know, out of the teens and into the 20s. Particularly from the African-American community, which is just so overwhelming, its impact on our culture. So there's the crazy breadth of it all.
Melanie, I'll go to you next.
And of course, because I represent the visual arts community, I tend to read visual art And I've actually been kind of mining our collection and looking back at our past exhibitions at the Boise Art Museum to look at the African-American artists that we have featured in the museum. And I was thinking about Kehinde Wiley and the fact that we had such a fabulous exhibition of his work before he became the presidential portraitist. And his work is so important. We had an exhibition of an artist named Carrie James Marshall over a decade ago. Kara Walker was featured at the Boise Art Museum, as Faith Ringgold. And when Faith Ringgold came to the museum, when we had a quilt exhibition of her work, she was so inspired by the Idaho Black History Museum that she actually created a limited edition print that showcased the Idaho Black History Museum. And we have that work in our permanent collection as well. So I've been inspired by that and doing some reading about all of those artists and the artists in our collection that we might be able to, as Kurt talked about, amplify some of those voices again moving forward.
Great. And last but not least, Laura, I hear that you jam with a French horn. So tell us, other than doing that, what are you listening to or reading?
Yeah. Well, I mean, when I moved out here, I got two books to read. One was Educated by Tara Westover, which has been just a phenomenal read. And then also Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler. And that also has been just an incredible read, especially during this period of time, and has made me kind of think differently and ask some of those big questions. In terms of listening, I think, you know, again, amplifying Black voices right now, George Walker's Lyric for Strings. If you just want to have a moment of quiet reflection, put that on. It is the most gorgeous, gorgeous work for strings. And he's an incredible composer. Also, you know, one of the works that we were going to present in one of our final chamber music series was by Valerie Coleman. And she is an incredible flute player and has written a number of works for Woodwind Quintet. And so I highly recommend checking her out. She's an amazing composer.
Oh, that's great. Thank you. And you know, we're a minute to the top of the hour, so I'm going to take this opportunity to thank you all, Melanie Fales, Charlie Fee, Laura Reynolds, and Kurt Zwolfer. I sure appreciate your time, and I know we live in a great community that's very supportive, but I will broadcast that again today. Any way you can support these organizations, please do so. It keeps the lights on. It keeps us, I think, as a better community. We're more vibrant, we are more compassionate when we embrace the arts. So I want to thank all of you from City Club of Boise. I thank you all for participating today.
Thank you.
You've been listening to a City Club of Boise forum about arts during a pandemic. This broadcast of the City Club was made possible with help from the Idaho Statesman, Idaho Public Television, KBOI, and Boise State Public Radio. Additional support comes from the University of Idaho, Boise State University, and Northwest Nazarene University. The City Club is a nonpartisan forum with the motto, "Things happen when people start talking." Forum series sponsors for the City Club of Boise are AARP Idaho, Bank of Idaho, Concordia University School of Law, Echelon Group, Micron, and Pacific Source Health Plans. Additional grant funding comes from the Idaho Humanities Council, a state-based partner of the National Endowment for the Humanities. And the program sponsor for this forum was Republic Services. Coming up June 17th, 2020, it's a healthcare expert panel about COVID-19, and you can register for that at cityclubofboise.org, where you can also learn about becoming a member and see a schedule of coming events. Connect on Facebook and Twitter by searching for City Club of Boise.